हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so from Chudamani's question 14. I understand. Okay, then can a Grihastha Vaishnava make a marriage relationship with a Yavana family? Vaishnava Das. From the general point of view, a Yavana remains a Yavana in the eyes of the general populace until he relinquishes his body. But from the absolute point of view, he is no longer regarded as a Yavana once he attains bhakti. Marriage is one of the 10 kinds of social rites, smarta karma. If a Grihastha Vaishnava is an Aryan, that is, if he is included within the 4 varnas, he should only marry within his own varna, right? Because you're trying to get equal nature, like that. So that's the whole point. Mm. Because it means your social status is there. So the difficulty is that, Bhaktivinoda Thakura recommends that one, even though one's a devotee, one still marries within one's nature, like that, because then there'll be that common background, the common thing. Because the point is marriage, it's going on what works just on a day-to-day basis. It's not going on how Krishna conscious one is. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you can be Krishna conscious, that'll make things go nicer. But it's not that Krishna consciousness is the requirement for marriage. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, a lot of people on the planet are married and not Krishna conscious. You understand? It's two different things. So much of the time we'll say, oh, we're devotees, it doesn't matter. But the point is why did they get divorced? Mm-hmm. You know, the other person wasn't chanting 16 rounds or, you know, when he saw the deity, he did not have that prema that I expected from him, and so I wanted to advance, and he wasn't. And so, are these the reasons people get divorced?
No.
They're purely mundane. So that means it's the natural, compatibility of their mundane nature is what you're putting together in a marriage. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Does that make sense? So there should be, because they're devotees, and of course there should be the spiritual element also. Mm. Right? Because that's the actual purpose of the marriage, is to become God conscious. But the reason that there is marriage is because of material considerations. It's not a need of the soul. It's not the nature of the soul. Does that make sense? Like that. So that beginning euphoric kind of element, it means it may hold it together in the beginning, yes, but it doesn't hold it together for 30 years, right? Like that. That euphoria element, you know, is good for 6 months, and you might get, you know, just out of momentum 3 years, right? And now what do you do for 27 years? Now it has to be that the nature is not compatible. It's not going to work. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why he said he should only marry within his own varna, right? Now, within devotees means we're doing the same thing, because means we're coming from this, when it mentions here the non-Vaishnav group that they're referring to, that's us, right? Well, not everybody, excuse me. But you understand? So So then that means within that you marry someone who has a similar nature. You know, as we mentioned, it's natural is that it's the same thing in a fallen position. Or so the brahminical nature within the yavana called the kshatriya, the vaishya, the shudra, that should still be common. Because if one takes up the devotion, he then falls into the varnashram within that place. You understand? It means a fallen Brahmin, if he does things properly, he ends up back as a Brahmin. A fallen kshatriya goes back as a kshatriya. Does that make sense? If that's the nature. Right? He's an administrator within the material world. He takes up devotional service, he'll still remain an administrator. If he's a businessman, he'll still remain a businessman after becoming a devotee. Right? Isn't it? It's not like in Chopati, they get all these, you know, qualified persons, and he was a doctor, and then when he became a devotee, then he became something else. Right? You know? Just he woke up one morning and he was something different, right? You know, does that make sense? They stay the same. So the thing is, whether it's in its purified natural state or whether it's in its that not so natural state, right? So that's why the commonality of nature is there. So that's the you know most important basis, and then you have the Krishna conscious culture, so that most of it's there. But one can also consider that there's going to be the kind of background that you can relate to. You know what I'm saying? If they're from different countries than this, but they should be able to relate to that kind of background. Does that make sense? So it's not uncommon. Someone's from another country, they go to a different country to do, you know, work or service or like that, and they can adjust to that place. So that means they can relate to the culture that's there. So if they marry someone from the culture there, generally there's not much of a problem. Does that make sense? But if they're not living the place and accustomed to that, then if they just meet somewhere in some airport like that, that the point is then the problem comes is that when they actually start to interact together, the backgrounds are going to be so different. You know what I'm saying? In other words, that should also be considered. Right? So in other words, the material element should be always considered. Right? Because like here, he's saying the yavana, then the thing is his standard of cleanliness, how he does things, the interaction with relatives, how they like to set up their house, what's important, you know, stuff like that is going to be different. So that's why one should be very careful about that. So if someone has that nature and they're in that purified condition, then you could consider. But the point is it's still varna and varna, because that's the point he mentions. Even if their social background means the area. Somebody's from South India, somebody's from North, someone's from East or West, or someone from India, someone's from America. That's another thing. But the varna must be the same. There's no question of getting around that one. Yes?
Maharaj, it says here he is no longer regarded as a yavana once he attains bhakti.
Yes.
Attains bhakti means as soon as he's engaging in devotional
service. Yes, yes. Attains bhakti means he would be situated. It wouldn't be a jnata sukriti anymore. Right, because before that, he hasn't attained. He's associating with, but he hasn't attained. But once that shraddha is there, and then he takes up that association of devotees, then you'd say he's attained bhakti. Right? You know, so then that's a different category then. But still, within that group, you want to see that it's equal varna. Because the marriage, you're marrying the bodies, not the souls. The souls aren't what's married. You know, I mean, this whole idea of the... What do they call that?
Soulmates.
Soulmates and all that. It's nothing to do with soulmates. It's just, you know, body mates.
Condition mates.
Hey, you know, he's my body mate. You know, like that. No, it's not soulmates. Like that. All it is that the conditioning is so close that it appears like that. But the point is it has nothing to do with the soul.
Conditioning mates.
Conditioning mates, yeah. Or what? Naimitika mates.
Yes.
Naimitika mates. Right. Yes.
This principle about equal nature, this also apply for friendship?
Friendship, yes, of course.
Yes.
Means, in other words, there must be something equal, right? Means, in other words, the less that there is equal means at least it's shared, then that means it's more of just an acquaintance. And the more, then it's more of a friendship, and if it's even more, it may be a close friendship.
Yes.
Like that. But the point is relationship can only be based on something common. Right? So the soul, you can say, then in relationship with another soul, the Satchitananda is the common element, that we're all coming from Krishna. That's the common element. So therefore, service. right? With and consciousness. These are the common elements, right? So with Krishna also, consciousness is the common element. You know, Satchitananda is there, but our amount is very small. His is very big. But still, it's the same environment that we like to be in and the same consciousness. Therefore, that's where the relationship is based. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So how about relationships that are based on differences, where one can help out the other in one area and the other can, I mean, opposites attract, that whole idea.
Yeah, but the opposites attract, what does that mean? What's the area?
What?
No. He's not catching it. Just like, let's say, the fire is hot and you're very cold. They're opposite. Yeah. What's the common point? You're hot, they're cold. What's the commonality?
Temperature.
You understand? So there's something that's common.
Okay, like that, yeah.
You know, in other words, they're emotional wreck and you're emotionally stable. But the emotional is the common,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Or you're good in business, they have some difficulty. Yeah. There's something in common.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Yeah. The point is if that commonality is not there, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
It appears, no, it's so different. They're not so different. Opposite means you have that one side of the coin and the other side of the coin. You say, oh, they're so different. They're the same coin. Just two sides of it. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the thing that you have to see. Even though the religious duties associated with the four castes are naimittic in nature, right? Because we're saying the yavana position is naimittic. But the religious duties of the four castes are also naimittic. So one might say, well, naimittic, hey, you know. They are all still recommended for the maintenance of domestic life, right? One cannot become a Vaishnava simply by giving up the social customs of the four varnas, right? That's not the point, right? That we were in class yesterday in the Bhagavatam, there was a comment at the end. Did you catch the subtlety there? It was like inferring that because a devotee, then one goes beyond these things because everything's engaged in Krishna's service, so one actually doesn't have to worry about varnashram. Right? That's why there was the point made, is this a question or a comment?
Yeah.
You know? Well, did he want to discuss it, or he just wanted to make his point? You understand? So the point is that we'll think it's because we're a devotee, then we don't care for that, but the point is what does varnashram deal with? How you get up in the morning, brush your teeth, go to the toilet, take a shower, dress, you know, decorate yourself, interact with others, you know, what's the relationships in the family, you know, how you're supposed to deal with each relationship, how do you deal with money in the family, what's the considerations of food, what's the considerations of the seasons, you know, what's a consideration of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you know, what are the proper times, and that. So did we mention anything here so far that devotees don't do? Right? So that's the whole thing, is we make it sound like it's completely a different thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is we kind of miss the boat there. Vaishnava should adopt whatever is favorable for bhakti, and one can only give up the duties of the varnas when he has become qualified to do so by genuine detachment. In other words, if you're in grihastha life, you need to follow the rules that go with grihastha life, but only that are favorable for bhakti.
Yes.
Right? So cleanliness is favorable, proper relationships, etiquette is favorable, you know what I'm saying, properly dealing with your money is favorable. You know, all these things are favorable, right? Driving your car without, you know, getting a ticket or, you know, having a wreck. These are all favorable, right? Locking your door so when you come home there's still stuff to use in Krishna's service. You know, all these different things are like that. So therefore one only gives up those elements as one is detached, right? Does that make sense? So the point is, you may say, well, I'm detached, my family's not. But the point is you're attached to the family. So their attachment comes along as part of your attachment. You know, that's the way it goes. Like that. You know, it's connected. So if you're not involved in any of these things, then there's very minimal duties to do. Right? But still, the basics are there. Brahmacharis have basics, and those are the fundamentals of the whole system. It's just how much detail is there. Then one can give up the duties of the four varnas and everything associated with them. Right? Then only you could do that. But the point is then you could say, therefore, that the person in Varnashram, he can give up all the duties and work beyond it. And the Yavana could give up all and work beyond it. And so you could say now they could get married. But the point is on that platform, why would they get married?
Just
giving up. Yeah, so it means he wouldn't be involved. So it means they could technically, but why would they? You know, so Varna Dharma can be given up easily when it becomes unfavorable to Bhajan. Similarly, Yavana's awakened faith and bhakti has the right to give up the association of the Yavana community. It becomes unfavorable for Bhajan, right? In other words, see, the point is with the Chankazi's descendants, they're all devotees. Therefore, it's not unfavorable for them to be in that environment. Right? Does that make sense? But if it is unfavorable, it can be given up. Because what he's making here is the Varnashram duties are only given up if you're detached enough from that, you can function consistently on that platform without using so much of that support. Right? But if it's from that reflection of that, the Yavana community, that can be given up if it's unfavorable. Like Haridas Thakur. When he was 5, he just left. Right? It wasn't favorable, so he just left. Right. You know, so there was sufficient genuine detachment. Yeah, right? It wasn't that he did, and then after 3 months he thought, this is crazy, and he went back home, you know.
Means yes. He left his family?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the point, is that devotees that are from these non-Vedic backgrounds, then if they give that up, it's not a problem, because if it's unfavorable, then that's it. So generally speaking, we're seeing in the context of community, then it must be favorable. Otherwise, how are they community? Mm. Yes. Right? Otherwise, then that community position wouldn't be favorable, and then they'd want to be in an ashram situation. Mm. Yes. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that means previously there wasn't so favorable, so devotees all gave it up. And now it's that depending on the situation, but it's more of a thing that one can remain in the community situation and still render devotional service. So it's not a big problem. Right? So then there's no need to give it up. It's not unfavorable. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, you're looking at it, the Vedic thing basically is favorable, though there's some things that may not be important, like Shraddha rites, like this, yes. You know, Karmakanda yagyas and this kind of thing. So those things aren't done. So in other words, when it comes to worship of the demigods, that's dropped. You only worship Krishna. Yeah. Right? Does that make sense? When it comes to scriptures and that, you only read Vaishnava literature. Right? Right? When you're taking care of people and that, dealing with people, you deal nicely, whether you're a devotee or not a devotee. Right? Guests are now, instead of just taking care of, you know, any kind of sin, now it's Vaishnavas. Yeah. Does that make sense? And your sacrifice is not something that the demigods or anybody else, it's only for Krishna. That's what adjusts. All the other little rules, those don't change. That's not a big philosophy there. Does that make sense? So we have to know what it is that we're dropping. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Varnashram can be given up easily when it becomes unfavorable to Bhajan. Similarly, Yavana who has awakened faith in bhakti has the right to give up the association of the Yavana community if it becomes unfavorable for Bhajan. Suppose that one Vaishnav is an Aryan who is qualified to give up the 4 Varnas, and another Vaishnav is a Yavana who is qualified to give up his community. Then what is the difference between them? Both of them have given up Vyavahara, which relates to ordinary life, and both have become brothers in regard to paramartha, spiritual reality. However, this principle of rejecting Varnashram does not apply to a Grihastha Vaishnava, right? Because that was the question, right? I mean, so he's first proving that spiritually it's the same. But now if you're talking about giving up the Varna Dharma, it's Grihasthas don't do that. A Grihastha Vaishnava should not give up domestic society until he is fully qualified to do so, even if it is unfavorable to Bhajans. Right? In other words, he'll just stay more away from the family and this and that. He'll only be involved with his own family that's devotional. So other members of the extended family he may kind of avoid. Right?
So can we say that when the Grihastha starts this process of giving up varna, that means vanaprastha.
That's vanaprastha, yeah. Yeah. So, but still, it's him and his wife. It's still they're following the same standards of cleanliness, this and that. Just that they're not so involved in making money and going to all the marriages and this and that. You know, like that. Because, you know, means we're not connected with it. But it's not an uncommon thing. You could say someone who's, you know, yeah, maybe in their 20s, if they're in these big extended families, they could have easily been at 50 marriages by that time, right? Easily, if not more, like that. And that's just all family and friends. You know, this is not someone that they don't know. This is they're obliged to be there. But the great thing about it is everybody's obliged to be there, and nobody wants to be there, right? It means the parents of the bride and groom, they want to be there. The bride and groom want to be there. Any of their close friends want to be there. But everybody else is just there because they're supposed to be there. So then the great part about it is therefore, you can just hang out with who you want because that's all they're doing anyway, right? So you can sit in some corner like that and talk about Krishna, right? And someone else is sitting in the corner talking business. Someone else is this. Someone else is that. And only at a major part in the ceremony, you know, then they all come together and all, you know, make their noises and Hari Bols and all this. And then after that, they go back to their different corners. Yeah? And that's just reality, no? Yes? No? Yeah, it's just the way it works. So that's the whole point. So it's not that it's a big thing to avoid. Because when you have, it means only when you have these big social things, then you have these points, right? Does that make sense? Because we're talking varnashram here. We're not talking yavanas. They don't have much family connection anyway. You know, if you move out and never see them again, it means they won't like it, but, you know, no one's going to take you to court, you know, in a sense. So it's easy enough. Even so, if it is unfavorable, okay. A grihastha Vaishnav should not give up domestic society till he's fully qualified to do so, even if it's unfavorable to bhajan. In other words, it's unfavorable to go sit for 3 hours at a marriage ceremony because you could be chanting or reading. But it's not destructive to his devotional service. You understand? Because there's nothing in the Vedic system that's actually destructive to devotional service. You can see the higher principle in it anyway. Right? Does that make sense? It means others may be seeing the lower. That's the problem with it. Right? It's not that the social interaction is a problem. It's that the consciousness of the others. So that's why you limit and are careful about how you deal. So here, that doesn't mean it's destructive. Right? While the yavana way of life may be destructive, therefore it can be given up. However, he can easily give up worldly society when firm attachment and affection for that which is favorable to bhajan awakens in his heart. Right? So devotees are kind of like, even in their family situation, they're kind of situated here. But the little details of the system still apply. Right? It's just common etiquette. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.31.32, Sri Krishna says, such a saintly person must be considered the most learned of men. He perfectly understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various Vedic scriptures possess favorable qualities that purify the performer, and he knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. Having taken complete shelter at my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities. Right? So in other words, when it's still not a disturbance, or that all the religious performances are purifying. So in that way, they're supportive. But once he comes to a particular platform, he ultimately renounces such things. Right? So you know, in other words, instead of being at house and taking care of this and that, he sits at the temple all day. Right? But it doesn't mean that you give up, you know, things like whether you're clean or not, or whether you interact with people properly or not. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you do whatever you want. You can sit with your back to the deity and, you know what I'm saying, roll around on the floor. No, you don't do those things. It still means it's therefore is what is connected with the worship. That's why then the Pancharatra then defines all these things again in connection with the deity. Right? The Vedas define them, but in connection with whatever situation you're in. Pancharatra defines them again in connection with the deity. So you can either be following the rules on the Vedic platform, you can be following the rules on the Pancharatric platform. Right? Does that make sense? Because here it means when we give up the Vedic, means we move to the Pancharatric. Right? It doesn't mean that we move to the whimsical. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's still there because Pancharatric means it's Ekayana. It's all focused on the deity. Chudamani. Can you eat food, drink water, and conduct other such activities with a yavana who has truly become a Vaishnav? Right? Because that's also then a point, because when you talk about the Maha, the great sins. Can we get to the great sins? No, that's up and coming.
No.
Yes, that's up and coming. Then killing a Brahmin, right? Stealing his gold, like that, sleeping with his wife, and intoxication. These are the four big sins, right? And associating with somebody who does those four, that's the fifth, right? So then here he's bringing up that, because this is the Mahapap, right? Vaishnava Das. A renounced Vaishnava who is indifferent to all social restrictions is known as Nirupeksha, without any needs or requirements. And he can honor Mahaprasad with such a Vaishnava. A Grihastha Vaishnava cannot sit and eat with him in the context of ordinary social or family dealings. But there is no such objection when it comes to honoring Vishnu or Vaishnava Prasad. In fact, it is his duty. All right? So in other words, for the sannyasi, it doesn't matter. Right? But for the Grihastha, it does, because of the social considerations. But when it comes to Mahaprasad, it means if you're at the temple taking prasad, next to you is sitting someone from a yavana, you know, how you say, Vaishnava, it doesn't matter, because you're just taking prasad. But going to his house, being invited, that whole social context, that's what a Grihastha would avoid. You know? Means this point here would be used in a humorous way between Advaitacharya and Nityananda Prabhu, right? Because Advaitacharya is, you know, the head of the Brahmins, you know, which happen to be Smartas, you know, where Chudamani's from, right? And so then they're really worried about all these social customs and everything. And so because Nityananda Prabhu is acting as an avadhu, it's not that he's a renunciate, you know, so they can go, oh, he's a sannyasi. So then a grihastha, you know, serving and feeding and taking care of and associated with a sannyasi would be very good. But he's an avadhu, so he doesn't follow anything. So then he's joking that, you know, I'll lose my caste by associating with you, and people will criticize and this and that. And so this way they have some fun, right? Because that's the fun. Nityananda is actually the senior position because the Advaitacharya is expanded from him. But Advaitacharya is the senior, right? And so then he's dealing with that there, you know? And then, you know what I'm saying? And then Nityananda is taking the avadhu, which is the higher position. He's the grihastha. But then, you know, so they just keep reversing these roles. That way they have some fun. Okay. Chudamani, then why is it Yavana Vaishnavas are not permitted to worship and serve the deities in the Vaishnava temples? Right? But there's no such objection when it comes to honoring Vishnu or Vaishnava Prasad. In fact, it is his duty. Okay. So why is it Yavana Vaishnavas are not permitted to worship and serve the deities in the Vaishnava temples? Right? So, yeah. So this is a question because in other lines, other than our specific ISKCON, even other Gaudiya lines, if you're not from an Indian background, you don't worship the deities and do that service in India. And I'm talking about other Gaudiya Vaishnava communities here that have Western devotees. Like that. It's just the way it is, you know. So that's his point here. So what about that? Why aren't they permitted if this is the case? Vaishnava Das, it is an offense to refer to a Vaishnava as a Yavana, simply because he has taken birth in such a family, right? Because you've been born there, it's not a consideration. You're living that lifestyle, that's the consideration. All Vaishnavas have the right to serve Krishna. If a Grihastha Vaishnava serves the deity in a way that breaks the rules of Varnashram, it is considered to be a fault from the worldly point of view. Nirupeksha Vaishnavas are not required to worship the deity because that would hinder their quality of being free from all external requirements and dependencies. Nirupekshata. Right? Because to worship deities, you have to have all kinds of facilities, paraphernalia, and everything like that. So that's why it's recommended. The sannyasis don't have deities. They don't do those things. But at the same time, it's because they're doing it to serve the Lord, and it's all focused on the Lord. If they have all that, then it's not actually a problem. Because all that trouble that they're taking is not for themselves, but it's for the deity. Does that make sense? But traditionally, nirupeksha would mean they wouldn't keep anything that's going to create any problem. But here, the problem's being taken for the Lord. So it's recommended that they don't have deities, but if they do, that trouble is for themselves. Right? Does that make sense? Because it'll be according to the quality of what facility they have and for the deity. Right? Like that. Well, the grihastha will be more his paraphernalia, his things, his worship, his facility. Like that. And so then that becomes... But that means then his entanglement is connected to the Lord. So it's a nice thing. It's a good thing. Right. They remain engaged in serving Sri Radhavallabha through service carried out by the internally conceived spiritual form, Manasi Seva. Right. So they'll see the worship, and then they'll do the worship within the mind and stuff like that. So that would also be very common. They would do Manasi Puja. Chudamani. Shudras are, right, so in other words, the Nirupeksha, who is actually following on that line, he wouldn't be involved the deity worship anyway means directly doing it. So it's his point is it doesn't come up as a point. So grihasthas follow the rules. So if he's grihastha as a yavana, then he wouldn't do that. But if he's not that. Chudamani. Shudras are not eligible to study the Vedas. So can a shudra study the Vedas when he becomes a Vaishnava? Vaishnavdas. From the absolute point of view, when one becomes a pure Vaishnava, he automatically attains the status of a Brahmana, whatever caste one may belong to. The Vedas are divided into two sections, instructions regarding karma, the performance of prescribed duties, and instructions regarding tattva, the absolute truth. Those who are qualified as Brahmas in a worldly sense are eligible to study the Vedas that promote karma, and those who are Brahmins by spiritual qualification are qualified to study the Vedas that promote tattva. Pure Vaishnavas can study and teach the Vedas that promote spiritual truth, no matter what caste they are born into. And it is practically observed that they do so. Right? So in other words, that's why our emphasis in the Vedas is on like the Upanishads. So for us to study the Upanishads, teach the Upanishads, that's not a problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It is said in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.21, Brahmana is a sober and spiritually enlightened person who clearly knows Parabrahma and serves him through Prema Bhakti, which is the manifestation of the highest knowledge. Right? That's Upanishads. Right? It's funny, it means we saw in that when we were going through the Mahaprabhu Siksha, he was quoting Upanishads, and they're all saying stuff like this, but people don't catch it. One is they don't catch it because you're dealing with synonyms, and so you don't necessarily know all the synonyms. Another is just, it's one verse, and then the rest of it will be presented more along the line of Brahman. So people don't notice it, even though it's there, like that. It is also said in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.8.10, he is a miserly man who does not solve the problems of life of a human being, and who thus quits this world like the cats and dogs, without understanding the science of self-realization. Prabhupada quotes that. Manu has said the following in regard to those who are brahmanas by vyavaharika, or social considerations. A brahmana, kshatriya, or vaishya becomes twice born by investiture with the sacred thread, and this prepares him for studying the Vedas. Dwija fails to study the Vedas after receiving the sacred thread, and instead studies other subjects such as economics, science, or logic. He and his family members quickly become degraded in this very life to the status of shudras. Right? In other words, the transcendental must be studied first, right? Then these other things can be studied after. So in other words, spiritual over the material, and of the material, the sciences over the arts. Right? Like that. So that's the order of study. Svetasvatara Upanishad. 6:23 explains the eligibility to study the Vedas that promotes spiritual truth. One who has, to his point, was he is a miserly man who does not solve the problems of life as a human being, right? So Shudra is human, so that means he should be solving. So the problem of life is spiritual, so he would also be studying that. Right? One who has unflinching devotion for the Supreme Lord, and is directed by the spiritual master, in whom he has similar unflinching faith, can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by revelation. Right? So that means anybody. The word para bhakti in the above shloka means shuddha bhakti. Right? So here para means transcendental. Pure bhakti. I don't want to elaborate any further on this topic. You should try to understand it yourself. In short, those who have faith in ananya bhakti are eligible to study the Vedas that promote tattva, spiritual truth, and those who have already attained ananya bhakti are eligible to teach those Vedas, right? Because the Veda is, it has four, there's four Vedas, each has four sections. So in other words, the end, the transcendental section of the four Vedas, right, which means the Upanishads. Upanishads, Vedanta, you know, the Gita, it means any of these ones that deal with this, the Bhagavatam, these are all then transcendental subject matter that can therefore be studied by anybody, any devotee, and taught by one who's qualified. Does that make sense? Right? So he doesn't want to get into discussing pure bhakti because here's a person who doesn't even understand what bhakti is. So it's not that the book won't discuss it. It's just we're on chapter 6 out of 40. So, you know, it will be discussed. Chintamani. Then do you people conclude that the Vedas that promote tattva teach only Vaishnava Dharma and no other religion? That was a clever one on his part that he caught that. Because here he's saying is that the Vaishnava Dharma is transcendental, right? The Brahminical isn't. It's the best position for getting to there, but it's not on its own. It's still naimittic. So now he's saying, so the Vedas that promote tattva, so are those actually only teaching Vaishnava Dharma, not something else? Because most means the smartest will take the Vedas that promote tattva and use it for impersonal understanding. Right? Vaishnava Das. Dharma is one, not two, and is also known as Nitya Dharma or Vaishnava Dharma. All other forms of Naimittika Dharma taught in the Vedas are simply steps leading to that eternal religion. Sri Bhagavan has said in Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14:3, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. It means he is the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas, and he is the speaker of the Vedas. Right? By this point in the discussion, the faces of Devi Vidyaratna and his associates looked pale and withered, and the teacher's enthusiasm was shattered. It was nearly 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so everyone agreed to adjourn the day's discussion, and the meeting ended. The Brahmana pundits departed, enthusiastically praising the scholarship of Vaishnava Das, and the Vaishnavs left for their respective places, loudly chanting the names of Hari. Okay, so, summary of chapter 7. Yes?
Just a little question. In the beginning of the chapter, it was said that it was maybe 100 Brahmana and 200 Vaishnava.
Mm-hmm.
So, practically speaking, they were discussing and everybody was able to hear?
Yes. I mean, it's quiet then. You didn't have, you know, yes, machines sitting, yes, next to your kunja making a lot of noise.
So it means everybody must be quite attentive, you know?
Yeah, but see, if you're in a natural environment, you can hear very well. Here the problem comes because of the echo.
Yes.
But if you're out in just a natural setting, you can hear very clear because all those funny high tones and all, there's no reflection, so the sound goes very clearly. Like that. It's not a problem. Plus, they would sit according to Asian spacing, not European spacing.
Close.
Okay. Yeah.
Here is what we have, you know. Yeah. See the spacing?
Yes.
Everybody would fit in half of this lower square.
Yes.
right? You know, in other words, see like this, then you would put double this, and then you take the whole place would be filled, right? That would be the natural spacing. Then if more people came, okay, then you sit in between, and it starts to get a little cozy, right? But they'll come and just, that's where you start. You understand? So the spacing also, you know, you could stick 200 people in here.
You see it sometimes at Chokati.
Yeah, they don't have any problems. They just pack right in. You know, it's like little kids. They all pack in, you know, it's like that. So it's... Okay, summary of chapter 7, Nitya Dharma and material existence. Because now we've compared Nitya and Naimittic. Now it's just material existence and Nitya. Over the ages, countless goldsmiths had lived in the ancient mercantile town of Saptagram on the bank of the Saraswati River. But Sri Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, since the time of Sri Udaranadatta, these merchants had become addicted to Harinam Sankirtan. One of them, however, was a very miserly person named Chandidas. Now this Saptagram, the goldsmiths, this is where the Suvarnavaniks come from. Right? Like that. So that's that particular group, that they're the Mullahs. Right? In Calcutta. So they technically they own Calcutta, but their home was Saptagram. One of them, however, was a very miserly person named Chandidas. Right, Chandi. Well, Chandi here can either mean I'm not sure if that means Kali, you know, form of Durga, or Chandi also can mean silver. You know, so, who used to abstain from Hari Kirtan with the townspeople because he was afraid of having to spend money for sponsoring festivals. Right? Yeah, so he's a bona fide miser, this guy. Right? Yes, because this Suvarnavaniks, the other ones, they always have big festivals and everything every year in their area, in their village. I'm not sure that they're not the ones who have those three deities, like Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan, that they're the expansions of them that stay here in Bengal. I think they are the ones who take care of and worship those deities. What's it? Vallabha. That's what he mentioned before. He was mentioned about Radhavallabha. So Radhavallabha is Gopinath. Like that. So that I don't remember the other two.
This Saptagram is the same when we go to the Howrah, it comes in the
room. Yeah. Chandidas had managed to accumulate a good deal of wealth through stingy dealings. His wife, Damayanti, had adopted the same mood and did not extend even the least hospitality to Vaishnavas or other guests. This merchant couple in their youth had given birth to 4 sons and 2 daughters. Their daughters had both married, and a vast inheritance was reserved for their sons. In a household that is not visited by Vaishnavas, the family members, especially the children, easily lose their charitable disposition, right? Because the children see the parents do it, so they just think this is what you do, right? But if the parents never do it, then you don't think this is something to do, right? So even though Chandidas is the idea, his parents, otherwise why would they point him out? He was very miserly, rather than saying he came from a miserly family or like that. That he became miserly himself, therefore then his children. And so, as Chandidas' children had grown older, they had become most selfish. In fact, they had become so greedy for the wealth of their parents that they now began to wish them dead. Right? So this is the problem, is that if you don't follow the Vedic things, then you think I'm doing this and my children will be just like me. No, they'll be worse. Yeah. Right? Means if you're doing all these things, then your children can be better. But if you're bad, so that's what's not understood, is that devotees sometimes they play with the modern Western culture, and so they think, oh, I can do this because I'm a devotee, and my children will naturally do the same thing. But what then they forget is that the Western culture is that it means, why would you listen to parents? Western culture, Vedic culture. Well, it depends where you're from. Okay, let us say if you're kind of like, let's say you're from kind of a, just for an example, right? Maybe from kind of Anglo-Saxony kind of background. You understand? So do people really, is it something would be nice, but do they really worry about it? No. Okay. So now, but you're doing that. And then also, why would you take care of the elders? That would be more of a Vedic or more of their culture? Vedic. Okay. So they're expecting, my children will be like me, follow the Western culture, but at the same time as, you know, the parts of the Vedic that I like, they'll do all those. But you'll find that they'll be even more than the parents of not wanting to follow any of these. So then, therefore, the parents will end up on their own, and what do? We spend so much time and energy. So that's why the Vedic culture is there. Right? So that these problems don't happen. So here, because they're not following the culture of giving in charity, therefore the children don't. So they're doing that because they're selfish, but they want all the money for the children. Right? But the children are even more selfish than the parents, and they also want all the money for the children. You know, like that. But not including the parents. Right. One day Chandidas called his family together. He said, "Listen, as we are now approaching old age, it is actually your duty to serve and care for us. But I notice that you are not looking after us properly, which is causing us great pain and suffering. Therefore, I have hidden a fair amount of wealth, which I'll give to the one who is obedient to me." The sons and daughters listened mutely to their father's monotonous monologue. Right, because he's doing it for simply materialistic means, and they're also doing it for materialistic means. Finally, dispersing and meeting clandestinely somewhere else later, there they conspired to send their parents far away, confiscate the hidden wealth, and share it amongst themselves. Right, so now that they know something's there, hey, okay. Then one morning, Hari Charana, the eldest of the sons, approached his father, and feigning concern and humility, suggested, "Why don't you and our beloved mother visit at least once the holy places of pilgrimage, the holy place of pilgrimage, Navadvip Dham, and thus fulfill the purpose of your human birth? I have heard that in the Kali Yuga, no other place of pilgrimage is as auspicious as Navadvip Dham. There's even a Vaishnavi who wants to accompany you." Chandidas and Damayanti happily agreed with the proposal. The next day, however, when on the way to Navadvip, they arrived at Kalna, news reached them that their sons had broken open their room and had looted and shared out their secret savings. Chandidas and Damayanti were stricken with grief over the loss of their wealth. They were unable to eat a single morsel and spent the entire day crying incessant tears. Right? However, the loss of the wealth, they're not so worried about the relationship. It's not as important. Of course they are, but it's still, the wealth is the real thing. After some time, the Vaishnavi attendant tried to console them, saying, "Don't be attached to your home. Come, you can take up the life of Vaishnava ascetics. Build a simple ashram where Vaishnavas can gather and live. The children from whom you have sacrificed everything have become your enemies, so there is no need to return home. Let us go to Navadvip and remain there. You can maintain yourselves by accepting alms. That will be a much better life." Abandoning all hope of a return to their home, the mercantile couple constructed a hut in the village of Kulia and on a property owned by a Chakori Chattopadhyaya and began to live there. Kuliagram is a holy place. It was common knowledge that if one resided there, all one's previous sins and offenses would be exonerated. Therefore, it was known as Aparada Bhajana Pat, the place that absolves offenses. One day, Chandidas told his wife, "Is it not high time we stop talking or even thinking about our children? We must have committed many sinful activities to have taken birth in the families of merchants. Influenced by our association and surroundings, we were always stingy and never hospitable, either to guests or to Vaishnav sadhus. Now, if we could earn some money here, we should try to be generous and hospitable and serve the sadhus. This will ensure for us a better birth in the next life. I have decided to open a grocery store and will borrow some money from the landlord to start the business." Within a short time, Chandidas opened a small store and managed to make some profit every day. The couple began to serve one guest daily, in addition to feeding themselves, and thus their life passed much more pleasantly than before. Right? He is a businessman, so he can do that. Right? It's not a matter of... Right? In this village lived a Grihastha Brahmana named Yadava Das, who lectured every day on Sri Chaitanya Mangala. Chandidas occasionally went to hear those lectures, and when he and Damayanti saw that Yadava Das and his wife were always engaged in serving the Vaishnavas, they also became inspired to do the same. One day, Chandidas inquired from Yadava Das, "What is this material existence?" Yadava Das said, "Many learned Vaishnavas live on the eastern bank of the Bhagarati in Sri Godruma. Come, let us go there and inquire from them. A deep question like yours can be resolved most satisfactorily there." Yadava Das and Chandidas prepared to cross the Ganga in the afternoon. Damayanti now regularly served pure Vaishnavas, and the miserliness in her heart had become negligible. "I will go with you to Sri Godruma," she said. "The Vaishnavas there are not grihastha, said Yadava Das. "They have adopted a life of strict renunciation and are detached from all relations with women. I am concerned that if you come along with us, they will be displeased." Damayanti replied, "I will offer dandavat pranam to them from a distance, and I will not enter their grove. I am an old lady. They will never become angry with me." By late afternoon, the three of them crossed the Ganga and reached Prajumna Kunj. Damayanti offered prostrated dandavat pranam at the door of the kunja and sat nearby under an old banyan tree. Yadava Das and Chandidas entered the kunj and with great devotion offered dandavat pranam to the assembly of Vaishnavas who were seated in the Malati Madhavi Bower. Yeah, so here was just that point of that Damayanti, because she was serving the pure Vaishnavas, that miserliness in her heart went away. Because it's from not serving Vaishnavas that the miserliness came. Right? So by serving, then it went away. Anantadas Babaji questioned, "Who is this new person?" Yadava Das explained the recent history of Chandidas and the reason for their visit. Anantadas spoke out with a touch of humor, "Ah yes, this is actually samsara. One who has understood what samsara means is intelligent, and he who is swirling unknowingly in the whirlpool of samsara is pitiable." With a softened heart, Chandidas inquired, "My humble prayer is that you may kindly enlighten me about the true nature of samsara." Or samsara. Yes, yeah, samsara. Okay. Anantadas Babaji, "Chandidas, your question is somewhat difficult. I would rather inquire from Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji or Vaishnav Das Babaji." Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji responded, "Anantadas Babaji's capacity is equal to the gravity of this question. Today we will receive spiritual instruction from him." Right? Because you would consider these others either more spiritually advanced or better at presenting. Like that. So he's thinking it's a difficult question, so to be able to deal with, you know, the whole, you're saying, what is material nature? It's like, you know, it's everything. You know, like that. But Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji said, no, you're able to take care of this quite nicely. Anantadas Babaji started, "When I receive your order, I must certainly say whatever I know." Right? So it's not a matter of, yes, I'll do a great job, or I can do better, or I can, you know, like this. No, I've received the order, so therefore I'll make my attempt. Whatever I know, I'll explain about it. And if it's enough, great. And if not, then there's others here who can, you know, do more. "I shall begin by remembering the lotus feet of my Gurudev, Sri Prajumna Brahmachari, a confidential associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are two distinctive conditions of the jiva. He is either liberated or he is entangled in material life, samsara. The liberated jiva is a pure devotee of Krishna who has never come under the sway of maya, or he has transcended the material nature by the mercy of Sri Krishna, is now in the liberated situation. Those who have turned away from Krishna and denied this relationship with him fall into the clutches of maya. Thus they are entangled in samsara from a time without beginning. Since they have rejected Krishna, Krishna has imprisoned them in the mundane nature by covering them with the three material gunas. Right? Because that's how one's imprisoned here. Because being in the material nature, just because one's here, that doesn't mean you're imprisoned.
Mm, yeah.
Right? It's because in the modes of nature, one is imprisoned. Right? Because someone under the modes, they're forced to stay within the material world. Someone who's transcendental to the modes, then they're here to do service. And they can go to the spiritual world and do service. Right? So it's the point of not being transcendental to the modes that binds one to the material world. Because otherwise, if one is not bound by the modes, one is serving Krishna. Right? So then, serving Krishna, one is transcendentally situated.
Yeah? So this is where we distinguish between material energy and external energy?
Yes, that's how we would say like that, yeah. Because material means that the modes of nature are functioning. So even we can say the devotee is in the material world, he himself is not, but he's in the situation because everybody else is controlled by the modes. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you can say the person is in a sane asylum, but it doesn't mean he's an inmate of the insane asylum.
Yes.
Right? But he is situated there. So you can call it an insane asylum. Right? You can also call it, you know, a government, you know, how you say, institution for the mentally challenged. Right? You know, like that. You have technical terms or just, you know, like that. You know, so the, how you say, the more familiar, how you say, intimate term is material world. Right? That's, does that make sense? Yeah. In his pure state, the cognition of the jiva is, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. However, upon entering the mundane plane, each jiva adopts false identities throughout his many different lives, and thus perceives himself in so many changing roles. These false identities are known as ahankara. There is also a further covering energy, which is known as mamata, attachment. Right? So therefore, attachment, one's covered by the false ego, that I am these roles, I am the controller, and by mamata, I am the enjoyer. Right? So there's two things that are covering.
Mm-hmm.
This compels the jiva to identify himself as the possessor of material objects and persons. Right? So this passive, massive, intricate net woven by the false concepts of I and mine is, in a word, samsara. Right? So samsara means the two, false ego and the concept that I can enjoy. Right? So that's samsara. Because what we can see is that you drop, let's say, the attachment to what's mine and just keep the I, you can get liberated. Right? So technically you're not working within samsara, but it doesn't mean you won't be back. Right? Does that make sense? So yeah. So, yeah.
So, Maharaj, there is no attachment. To get attachment, we need to have ahankara.
Yes, yes.
Ahankara first.
Yes. Means that I and mine, is that means mine is based on I, because you only get attached, it's connected to the identity. Now, if I'm servant of Krishna, then our attachment is to Krishna.
Yes.
But if I'm in yes. If the I is I'm the controller of the material nature, I'm the enjoyer of the material nature.
Is this term upadi?
Upadi.
Is that similar to ahankara or is
no? Upadi means is that what is the designation? It means, in other words, the false ego is it's an ego that's false. Now, what it specifically is connected with, that's the upadi.
Okay. So ahankara is just more generally.
Yeah. The tendency. It means, but it's the general, but it will be manifest through the upadi.
Yeah.
Right, but then that means when you add the attachment to it, then you can say that my body, my house, my family, my money, my position, my all these things. So I am that. So those are upadis.
Okay.
So you take away those upadis. So, but someone, let's say, has just a sense of mind, but not so much of I. So then they're doing nice work, dealing with people nicely. So they'll just be situated very nicely within the material world. Right? And the person who has the sense more of the I and not the mind, they'll liberate themselves from the material world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. But the point is neither of them actually get out of, you know, samsara.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one temporarily appears to, but they're, that they...
Yeah.
Right? They'll be back. Okay. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.8, as is stated, the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Right? So that's how it works. The I is the masculine and the mine is the feminine. Right? So that's why you do one without the other, it still is not on the spiritual platform. One has to give up the material concepts of I and mine. Then it's complete. So therefore, I and mine go together. Right? I, then, what's the use of having something if you don't enjoy it? So therefore, the masculine principle is attracted to the feminine. The feminine principle, what's the use of the facilities of enjoyment if there's not a stable situation in which you have something to enjoy? Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, the two are naturally attracted to each other. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The man thinks, I will enjoy with the woman. The woman thinks, I will enjoy because the man will provide the things that I will enjoy. Yes. You understand?
When you put it like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the tattva. Yeah. You know, and then there's the illusion that is allowed to go on so that you work like a donkey to provide everything, right? Yeah. And remember, four times is clever.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, sex serves as the natural attraction between man and woman, and when they are married, their relationships becomes more involved. Due to the entangling relationship between man and woman, there's a sense of illusion whereby one thinks, this man is my husband, or this woman is my wife. This is called Hridaya Granthi, the hard knot in the heart. This knot is very difficult to undo. Even though a man and woman separate, either for the principles of varnashram or simply to get a divorce. In any case, the man always thinks of the woman, and the woman always thinks of the man. Thus, a person becomes materially attached to family, property, and children, although all these are temporary. The possessor, unfortunately, identifies with his property and wealth. Sometimes, even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple, or to a few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi. But such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. The attachment of the family is the strongest illusion. In the Satya Samhita, it is stated, sometimes it is found among exalted personalities like Lord Brahma that the wife and children are not a cause of bondage. On the contrary, the wife actually helps further spiritual life and liberation. Nonetheless, most people are bound by the knots of marital relationship, and consequently, they forget their relationship with Krishna. Right? So here, then, is pointing out is that if the... going back. It's so as the relationship becomes more and more close, more and more intimate, then the entanglement is more and more, because then the intensity, the fullness of it, is more, so that means the situations and interactions required to maintain that level of intensity become more. Right? Because that's the point. It's not it got to a level of intensity and okay, now we step back and that was cool. You know, that it has to get more and more intense like that. So as it gets intense in this way, then we see also that produces children, because that means then you need to intensify your facilities, you have to intensify your money, you have to intensify your social status, everything must be intensified. Right? So the entanglement becomes more and more. So he's pointing out sometimes even after renunciation, sannyasi, you know, becomes attached to the temple or some little facilities he has, but still it's not as much as this other, because it's only the situation. It doesn't have the emotional connection that the other does, because that's where it actually is. It's not the facilities, it's the emotional connection that's the main point that drives it. Right? The other is that it works, it's nice. Right? Does that make sense? But, you know, the man becomes attached to something because it works really well. Right? He likes his pen because it works really well. Right? You know, but it's not necessarily, it has other emotional and other elements to it. So it means it's not as entangling. Does that make sense? But the relationship, then you need all these things for the relationship. That's where the entanglement is. Right? But it's still not ideal. But he also points out is sometimes if they're exalted, even as grihasthas, it doesn't create a distraction. It's simply a support, because then he's involved in devotional service. The wife wants to be involved. He's maybe thinking he's just going to sit at home. The wife says, no, let's go to the temple. Like that. Or, you know, we should do something. We should get things to, you know, give to the deities. Or, you know, we're going to someone's house. Let's give something nice to them. Or, you understand? So the woman, because of that religious element, wants to do all the things nicely. Right? So the man may tend to function more on the tattva because of the wife's influence, that religious asset. So you're performing activities that are engaged in devotional service, right? So in this way, then the husband and wife, then there's not a problem. But it's not common. He says, nonetheless, most people are bound by the knots of marital relationship. So the tendency is to therefore forget and therefore get distracted, right? So that's why then, whatever the situation, one should know that to try to connect it to Krishna. That's what one's trying to do. Then it becomes nice. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, attachment's not good, but the emotional attachment's much greater than just the externals. Right? And of when the emotional attachment is there, if it's based on Krishna consciousness, then it can be supportive. But if it's not, then it's really going to be trouble. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in other words, best is no material, you know, attachments, and therefore one's free, nirupeksha. Next best would be, you know, the how you say, means you could say, the grihastha who is completely is detached, and he and his wife are just serving Krishna like that, because then it's the most progressive. Mm-hmm. Next would be the sannyasi, who may get attached to some of the things, but it's something very easily to break. Right, you could say in practical dynamic it would be this. Then worst would be the grihastha who's attached to the facilities, because that would be very difficult to break. Right, you understand? But as far as situations, which is safer, the sannyasi with the few things is a little easier than the grihastha that doesn't really get attached, because that could turn. Right? At the same time, as you could look at it, because the grihastha has been able to elevate themselves to that position despite having all the facility, then they may be very solidly situated. So you'd have to look at what the individual. But we understand that not being involved is the best, and being totally involved is the worst. Right? And then what's in the middle depends on the situation. You put one better than the other. Does that make sense? Yes.
And marriage means so the question of the emotion means when a person is attached emotionally, the advice is to be attached emotionally more to Krishna.
Yes, but then so in other words, it's you're connecting that emotional thing to Krishna.
Yes.
But the point is what are the duties? So one's emotionally attached, but what are the duties? Because even when it's emotionally attached, doesn't mean you're doing the right thing. So what are the duties in that position of attachment? What should you be doing? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes. Is there a consideration like if a husband and wife both are Brahmana by nature, and then they are not attached with the facilities, they are attached to Krishna. But if a husband and wife, by quality they are Sudra, so they are getting more emotionally attached to themselves.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. As they develop as devotees, the Brahminical culture is there. The occupation will remain Sudra, but their culture and their attachment will become Brahminical. So then, naturally, it will, you know what I'm saying? It just depends upon their commitment to Krishna consciousness. So therefore, you could see a very detached Shudra, right? And possibly an attached Brahmin. But generally, you'll find more detached Brahmins and more attached Shudras. Does that make sense? That's just natural. But the point is, Vaishnavism will take one beyond. So the culture is that you function at the level of your being comfortable. Does that make sense? Like that. What's natural for you, and also it means they have more facilities, you use it for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's okay. Oh, okay. Well, oh no, now we're on the top. top of 21. In the pure state, I and mine are absolute realities. They have factual existence. But in samsara, all varieties of I and mine are false and artificially imposed. In other words, you know, I am servant of Krishna, Krishna is mine. But it's not a problem. But in the material world, is what I you identify with is not real, so therefore the mind can't be real. Hmm. Right? Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, so that's the problem. They do not represent the true self of the jiva. Rather, they are transitory, illusory identifications. Still, that does not mean that the material world is false. It is factual, by Sri Krishna's will. However, it is the material conditioned jiva's concept of I and mind that are false and illusory. In other words, the world is real, but the illusion that one's in, it means, in other words, what you think are real that is actually illusion, that's what's the illusion.
Yeah.
Right. Means that if you think that there's some reality to this world separate from Krishna, that's what's illusory. Yadava Das, why does the jiva pursue these false identifications? Now, another interesting thing here. What was his name? Chandidas has gone to Yadava Das. Right? And so he asked him the question about samsara. He, Yadava Das, said, let's go to Godroom, and then we'll meet the Vaishnavas there. Right? And so then they go, and then he asks the question. And now he's asking all the things to bring it out, because he'll be better at asking the question. Right? But the benefit is for Chandidas. Right? Yadavadas, why does the jiva pursue these false identifications? Anantadas Babaji. Bhagavan is the Purna Chit Vastu, complete spiritual being. And the jiva is the infinitesimal Chit Vastu, spiritual spark. Right? So we're Chit Vastu, and he is Purna Chit Vastu. Initially, the jiva was situated on the borderline between the material and spiritual worlds. From this location, those jivas who did not forget their relationship to Sri Krishna became fortified with the spiritual energy. Did not forget the relationship means they had a relationship. Right? So did not forget means you're having. So forget means you had and then you forgot. Right? Like you told the kid to do something and then they didn't. So then what do they say? I forgot. Means so they knew. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So from this location, those jivas who did not forget their relationship to Sri Krishna became fortified with the spiritual energy, right? So they take up the association of the internal potency, right? And so then they go on to develop prema. And were attracted into the spiritual realm, right? Because the point is you're in the middle, you can go either way. Right? So that borderline means both are there, and then you don't forget the relationship, so therefore you take up that association, it becomes fortified, and then you become attracted to the spiritual. Does that make sense? So that means everything is done for Krishna. Thus they entered into the transcendental abodes of Sri Krishna and became engrossed in his service as his eternal associates. Right? Simultaneously experiencing divine ecstasy. Right? So then they're the ones that go to Goloka. Right? Meanwhile, those jivas who desire to enjoy the material world separately from Sri Krishna, thus rejecting him, were automatically dragged down by Maya and cast into the prison house of samsara. Right, so here, enjoy the material world separately from Krishna. So that means the material world had to be present. So they want to enjoy that separately. Because if you're seeing something to enjoy, you're seeing the material world. You're seeing something to serve Krishna, you're seeing the spiritual world. Right? It's one or the other. Does that make sense? Okay. Since the moment of entrance in the material world, The jiva has lost his true spiritual identity and has become overtaken by the false pride of material identity. He thinks himself as the lord of all he surveys and maintains other such misconceptions. Since the moment of entrance in the material world, so that means he had to enter. He was from outside. Right? So it's not from here, but at the same time, he's not from Golok. You understand? Yeah. So therefore, now he's entered into the material world. Right? Because where the two come together, it's not the material world, it's not the spiritual world. Right? Means it's not Goloka, but it's not the material world. It's both of them simultaneously. That's the tattva, where the two are there at once. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have the water. You have automatically, naturally, the land. But there's that space in between that the water comes and the land is there.
Yeah.
Right? And you can see them both at once. You can see the water, you can see the sand underneath. Understand? So that's what we're talking about. Yes. Oh, okay. So therefore, he's lost his true spiritual identity. So that means he had his true spiritual identity, but he wasn't interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And has become overtaken by the false pride of material identity, that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? It's not specific yet, but it's but still that primordial I am a control, I and mine is there. And then he thinks himself as the lord of all he surveys and maintains other such misconceptions. Right? Even the lord of what you can't survey. Right? So that means, isn't that the, what do you call it? The famous, Vini Vidi Vici or something like that. Or something like that. You know, I came, I saw, I conquered, right?
Oh, okay,
it's
like
all,
that.
You know, yeah. What I see, I'm the lord of, you know. So. Yadavadas. Why do we fail to awaken our real original identity despite all our attempts? Anantadas Babaji. Human spiritual endeavor may be divided into two categories, appropriate and inappropriate. Right? So now we're talking on this side. It's not, well, why did he come here? That's why it says somehow or another. Right? Somehow, the point is you maintain the relationship, you cultivate that, you come under the protection of the spiritual energy, you develop that love for Krishna, you go back to Godhead. Means when I just say you go to Golok, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't, then you become attracted material energy, then you're placed within the material energy. So that much we understand about the science. But why that happened, that's just somehow or other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just somehow or another. Human spiritual endeavor, okay, appropriate and inappropriate. If appropriate endeavors are made, they will definitely remove our false pride and false egoism. However, on the other hand, how can one expect positive results from inappropriate endeavors? Right? So appropriate is always going to give a better result, and inappropriate is always going to give a not so good result. Right? Right? Does that make sense? So appropriate means it's reducing the false ego. False pride and false ego. Okay, you're the big guy, you're very rich, but what are you supposed to do with your money?
Sacrifice.
And then that means, who's going to come to the sacrifice to do it? Brahmins. And your relationship with them is?
Servant.
But you're the big guy, you have all the money. They're the poor guys. So you have to respect them. You have to regulate your life. You have to give in charity. You understand? So always these things are there. You're the king of the country and everything like that. But what's the appropriate action? You make all your decisions on your own?
No.
Means you listen to the Brahmins. But they're not in control of the country. Right? But they're in control of you. Right? Easy enough to understand. He's the king of the country. He's in control of the country. But when he goes into the inner chambers of the palace, who controls him?
Brahmins.
You didn't catch the subtlety.
Oh,
you understand?
Why?
So in other words, he controls the country, she controls him.
Yes.
Right? So now you can work just exclusively on that, or you can also add into it being controlled by the Brahmins.
Yes.
Right? So in other words, the ashram side is controlled by the wife, the varna side is controlled by the Brahmins, right? Does that make sense?
and who controls the wife?
Huh?
And who controls the wife?
The religious principles. And so therefore, and Brahmins control the religious principles, so that controls. So in this way, then, the Brahmins are in control of the ashram side also. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they're directly in control of the Varna side and indirectly control of the ashram side.
But the Veda is in control of the Brahmins.
Yes, and the Veda is in control of the Brahmins. And Krishna is in control of the Vedas. Right? But the gopis are in control of Krishna. Yadava Das, kindly enumerate the inappropriate endeavors. Ananta Das Babaji, to follow the Karmakanda methodology, thinking that such practice will cleanse the consciousness, enlighten one with the non-dual Brahman realization, which will then in turn eradicate Maya, is an example of inappropriate endeavor. Right? And this is the good one. the one in the Gita that I am the Lord Master, I have killed my enemy, I've made myself strong, even more inappropriate. That's the impious side of this one. Okay. Karmakanda methodology, that such practice will cleanse the consciousness, enlighten one with a non-dual Brahman realization, and which will then in turn eradicate Maya, is an example of inappropriate behavior, because it really actually won't do that. It may temporarily do that, but it doesn't permanently do that. Another example is to try through the Eightfold Yoga system, known as Astanga Yoga, to enter transcendental samadhi. This is almost impossible. Right? Satya Yuga, you hear some examples. There are many other inappropriate endeavors of this type. Yadavadas. Why these attempts are considered inappropriate, right? Though they're recommended by the Vedas. Anantadas Babaji. They are inappropriate because trying to reach the goal through these endeavors actually create further obstacles upon the path. Right? Because then you think karma is the cause of bhakti, making success very difficult and probably impossible. Our material entanglement has begun from our offense to the Supreme Lord. Thus, the only way to liberate ourselves from this fallen condition is to remove this initial offense and try to evoke the mercy of the Lord. In this way, we can be released from illusion, earn back our pure spiritual identity. Right? It's inappropriate and create further obstacles, making it probably impossible. He didn't say it's impossible, but probably, right? Because the point is, what are you trying to do? You're trying to reduce I and mine, right? But now this very qualified, smart Brahman who's doing everything properly, is very knowledgeable, is very accomplished in his practice, how does he identify himself?
The controller.
Right? I am the Brahman. I am doing the sacrifices. In this way, I am the controller. I am purifying my consciousness. I will come to the platform of non-dual Brahman. I will enjoy. And while I'm here, by my pious activities, I have all nice facilities. I will enjoy. So that's why it's probably impossible. But if somehow or another you can get that person to surrender to Krishna and become a devotee, then they're nicely situated. But on its own, it creates its obstacles, right? Does that make sense? While, if you look at it for the Malechan Yavana, it's within their own society, you can say, yes, he's very great and special. But if you look at it in reality of the Vedic culture, it's not really a great position. Therefore, the humility and all these things, there's more of an element that you have more. In other words, there's a better chance of a window of spiritual opportunity in that position than the other one. Right? Does that make sense? But if they take it up, then they have all the baggage of their previous karma to deal with. Right? Well, the other one has minimal the karma, but still that attachment to the mode of goodness will be a distraction. Mm. So in other words, the material world is not a good place. And no matter what your position, you should try to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. That's the point, somehow or other. Because if you can do that, then there's all success. So everybody has a strong position, everyone has a weak. So you cultivate the strong, you avoid the weak. Does that make sense? Vaishnava Das, what then is called appropriate endeavor? Ananta Das Babaji, Sadhu Sangha, right? Because he didn't even bother with sinful activities. That's not even a question. Here, inappropriate is simply you're involved in the smarta activities, you know, of karma and jnana, right, and yoga. These are inappropriate, right? Anything less than that is obviously inappropriate.
That's because they're actually nimittic.
Yes, right. If the guy says, let's say the doctor says, don't eat vegetables, right? And so then there's a pump. So, you know, can I eat a pumpkin? You know, so says no. So automatically that means, you know, eating a potato or something that's smaller goes along with it. You know, no, but this is so big, it's different. Right? No. Vaishnava Das Bhavi, Sadhu Sangha, association with saintly persons and prapatti, surrender, are the proper means. Right? Mm. So that's what will work for everybody. If there's that surrender to Krishna and the association of devotees, that will work for anybody in any situation.
Yeah.
Right? Pious or impious, it doesn't matter. Sadhu Sangha has been described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.30 as follows. O sinless rishis, direct perception of the Supreme Lord is very rarely obtained. Therefore, I ask you to tell me what is of the most benefit to humanity, utmost benefit to humanity. After all, even half a moment of association with saintly souls within this samsara, cycle of birth and death, is a priceless treasure for any man. Here he's saying even half a moment. So we're not even, you know, so instead of 11th of a second, we're talking about a 22nd of a second here is the value. So footnote 8. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22:54-55, it is stated, the verdict of all revealed scriptures that even by a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain all success. The value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of the heavenly planets or liberation from matter. And what to speak of worldly benedictions, the form of material prosperity, which is for those who are meant for death. Right. So we're talking about, you know, we're not even talking about the money and stuff that comes from it, let alone sinful activities. So it's just, right? Okay. Prajapati is described in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. However, those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Okay, footnote 9. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse, another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be held by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna, or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service of Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of the illusory energy, can order this insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul, and out of his paternal affection for the living entity, who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent material nature. Because he's in control of the material nature, and material nature is in control of us. So if we surrender to him, then the material nature will pull back, right, by his grace. When he is satisfied, then that will go. Then the material nature will go back. So that's why one is persistent in keeping at that, to please the Lord. That's why trying to do that separately won't work. You can do all you want, be as pious as you like, you still won't be freed from entanglement in material nature. You may make a better situation, right? The smarta Brahma is the good example. Pious, following the Vedas, doing everything very nicely, living the perfect sattvic lifestyle, but it's not devotional, so they'll never actually free themselves. But taking up devotional service pleases the Lord, that's why. So one wants to be determined to do that. Not that you try once and then that's it. You know, you keep at it. That'll make it work. Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Prasanna Veta Bhaktivinda ki, Janitai Gaura Premanati. Oh.